We're starting the recording in the middle, in mid-sentence, because before we started learning, Tom was giving us a report from his trip yesterday to the planet Mercury, where he calculated the distance between Earth and Mercury and the transverse of Mercury. How often can this be done?
It's 12 times every 100 years.
12 times every 100 years. But it's actually...
Previous time was 3 years ago, the next time is in 13 years.
But because of the astronomical connection to our Perek, this is relevant to the Gemara, so we're recording this.
I'm going to try to find a better connection to our Perek in a minute, but yes. So the angle is really small for Mercury because it's so far away and because it's small. So actually Halley, of Halley Comet fame, figured this out in the 1750s, and he said, okay, so Mercury is too small, Venus is bigger and closer, right? So instead of holding your hand out there, as your finger gets closer, the difference in the two pictures gets bigger. So he said, we can do this with Venus, except that Venus only passes in front of the sun twice every 125 years. And it wasn't going to be in Halley's lifetime, but he wrote a paper.
But he did the math.
He did the math, right? And then he said, even for Venus, measuring the distance on the sun, basically if you took a picture from the North Pole and the South Pole, the disk of Venus would overlap. It's that small of an angle. So they couldn't measure that angle either. But then he figured out what you were saying is, you don't actually have to measure the angle because that's really hard. What you got to do, right, since the sun, I want to borrow your cup, since the sun's a circle, and one guy is going to see Venus transit lower, and one guy's going to see it transit higher, instead of measuring the distance, what we could do is just measure how long does it take from Venus to get from one end to the other. And that is, instead of measuring the height on the sun, since it's a round circle, and as you get lower, this distance gets smaller. Or as you get higher, the distance gets bigger. So the delta t, the time difference, can be a replacement for the angle, and it's easier to measure. Because if the whole trek takes 4.5 hours, so one guy's going to measure 4 hours, 30 minutes, and 23 seconds, and one guy's going to measure 4 hours, 31 minutes, and 7 seconds, which is a lot easier to measure than an angle.
Wait, so what year was it first done?
So this was first done in 1779.
But they had timepieces that were that accurate?
Okay, so right, they didn't have timepieces that you could carry around the world and be in sync, but a nice big grandfather clock sitting on the beach in Tahiti. And all you need to know is that it runs for 4 hours and 30 minutes with second accuracy, which they had. And this was actually, if you recall, Captain Cook went to Tahiti
in order to
do this. So like the British and the French sent people, you know, all over the world, had to be in northern hemisphere and southern hemisphere. Mason and Dixon of Virginia, Maryland fame.
Yeah.
In America, before they were famous, they first did this in South Africa, and that's where they earned their fame. And then I forget the name. There was some unfortunate French scientist who was sent to an island off the coast of India, but you know, like it takes a year and a half to get there.
He missed it by a day.
By the time, he was going to get there early, but in the process, England and France were having, I don't know, the 30 Years' War, I don't know which one. So by the time he got there, England had taken over the island, so he couldn't land. Because he was in a French ship, and he couldn't take any measurements from the ship. But then he figured, then next, the Venus transits come in pairs of 8 years every 125 years. He said, the next one's only 6 years away because it took me 2 years to get here.
Might as well stay there.
I might as well wait around. And then by then, France retook the island. So he got there. He had years to set up. He calibrated all of his instruments. He was set up on the day of the transit, and it was cloudy. Cloudy.
That happened to you once, didn't it?
It happened to me too, but not quite as
bad.
Wait,
so where were you yesterday measuring the transit?
I was in Ramot. I can send you pictures.
But, I said it worked.
Okay. So this guy goes home, right, and he gets home like 10 years after he left, and he discovered that his relatives had him declared dead and, you know, married his wife, and he was like, went in the poorhouse.
Baharut Beraglav.
All in the name of science.
The sugya in the Gemara, Baharug Baraglav. Someone's declared dead, and his wife, they give to Edus, and they mate the Isha, the Eshes Ish, and the dead guy walks in on his own two legs.
So let me just add one more parak related to our Gemara, which we didn't get to yet. But one of the differences between the old Ptolemaic system versus the Copernican system with the sun in the middle or the earth in the middle. So it turns out that for many cases, the old model, like Kiddush Shachodesh, the Rambam gives you all the calculations using the old model that the earth is Kilu Be'emtza, and everything works out fine. You can figure out exactly when the moon is going to come and when the new moon is, etc. But one of the ma'alot...
Yeah, because it doesn't really matter.
It's just a model.
Right.
But one of the ma'alot of the Copernicus model is that it explains... Well, let me see how you put this. In the old model, the distance between the planets was arbitrary, right? Like, you knew how long it took each planet to go around the Earth, Kiilu, but the distance between them was totally arbitrary. It didn't enter into the model. In the Copernicus model, especially after Kepler, Copernicus, because... Well, I can't really say this, but in his model, there was a scale model of how far all the planets were. Like, you knew that if Earth was 1, then Mars was 1.7, and Mercury was 0.3. But you didn't know what the 1 equals.
What 1 Earth unit was.
What 1 unit from the Earth to the Sun
yeah.
equals.
Isn't that called an Earth unit in EU?
It's actually called an AU, astronomical unit.
Close, right? Yeah, it was close.
So, but once you can measure the distance to any one of the planets, like Earth to Venus, then you fill in that number and you know it all. So that's why this measurement was so important, because it wasn't just measuring the distance to Venus. Once you measure that, you know the distance to Saturn, and you know all the distances between the planets based on...
In AU, is the Earth at its apogee or its perigee?
The average.
Its average.
150 million kilometers, give or take.
A few.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be back in 13 minutes.
I had a different question, which I've been meaning to ask you, but I'm not going to ask it now because it takes us further away from the Gemara. But like when they discover, you know, like now in the last number of years, until a number of years ago, like we had no evidence that there were planets outside of our solar system. And then suddenly, like, we start looking for them and like we find billions of them.
Only a few thousand.
Yeah, okay, but that's a lot. Going from zero to like, you know, even one is usually... So they say like, you know, there's a planet, it's an M-class planet. I mean, I use Star Trek language.
Right.
M-class planet means it's they think, like, in theory, it has the conditions to support life, oxygen and water and whatever, size and distance from its star and things like that. But it's 500 light years away. How do they know?
So
what's on the planet? What
are the
techniques?
You know, like, I showed these people at work, and they're looking in there, and they go... You sure there's just not a speck on your lens? Because, like, you see this ball, and then you see, like, a tiny, tiny little black spot. Aside the fact that if you, like, wait 10 minutes, you can see that it's moving. So this is actually one of the ways that they measure this, because if you had a light meter on the telescope, you could see, the amount of light coming from the sun is now has been dipped by 1 over 200. Because that's the diameter of Mercury against the diameter of the sun. So that's one of the techniques that they use for other planets, is if you're looking at a star...
Well, that's for size.
No. That's the output of the light. If you're looking at a star in a very high-powered telescope and you can measure how many, you know, lumens a star is putting out, and you're seeing, okay, it's always putting out, you know, whatever it is, 10,000 lumens,
right.
And now it's putting out 9,930.
Because it's being eclipsed.
For a couple of hours, and then it goes back up. Then one explanation for that would be that there was
something passed in between.
It happened to be, like by us, happens once every 50 right. years, but we're looking at thousands of stars, so if you happen to see that...
Right, so okay, and they can get a guesstimate of the size of the planet and its distance from its star, etc., but how do they know that it's got water and oxygen?
Right,
and
so for most of these things, they don't know very much, except that they say, so one technique is using the light output. I think the more common technique is they're looking for the wobble of the star, right? Because of Newton's laws.
If there's an atmosphere, it would be refracted.
Forget the atmosphere, right? Like, you know, the whole solar system is revolving around its center. So, like, actually, the center of our solar system is not the center of the sun. Since Jupiter is on one side, it's actually like a couple of thousand kilometers away from the center of the sun, because you got to add up the mass of all the planets, and we all equal like about zero, but Jupiter is like 0.1% of the mass of the sun or something. So that therefore our sun, actually as Jupiter is going around, our sun is wobbling a tiny, tiny bit. So any star with a large planet is going to wobble. So if you measure the position of a star and you can see that it's wobbling, but you don't see like a companion star, then you can say, there must be a planet that has mass X orbiting nearby. So you can get the mass of the planet. And then if you also had the light dip, then you could also get the size of the planet for its distance. There's only like a handful maybe of planets that they could say, okay, we actually like saw the planet, and we could take the spectrum through the atmosphere and say, we discovered methane on this planet or something. But okay, that's very, very few.
All right, we should go back to the Gemara. But I'm reminded of a story that happened. I think this is fascinating, but I see some people are not as fascinated.
We need more pictures.
Yeah. But we were someplace at a Simcha, and we're sitting next to people we don't know, and somebody says, "Oh, this is Jeff Sachs. He studies Agnon." So the person said, "Oh, Agnon, I don't know much about Agnon. Tell me something about Agnon." So like 45 minutes later, Lonnie says to me, "He wasn't that interested."
Wrong Agnon.
Okay, look at the Mishnah. We're gonna start learning the second perek on Kaf Beis Omad Aleph, and it's a short perek. We can learn the whole perek, not tonight, but you understand. But look at the Mishnah. The last Mishnah in the first perek says Mishira Tachodesh Ve'eno Yachol Lalech Molichin Oto. Somebody sees the new moon, but they're unable to go. They're old, they're infirm.
Where are you going?
Kaf Beis Amud Aleph, the last mission in the parak.
Previous parak, okay.
So they would take him, they would carry him, they would bring him, they'd drive him. Alachamur, afilu b'mita, right? They'd take him on a donkey, they'd take him on a stretcher. Ve'im ואם צודה להם לוקחים בידן מקלות ואם הייתה דרך רחוקה לוקחים בידן מזונות. In other words, they could carry the Rashi explains you could on Shabbos. In other words, you could travel on Shabbos even on a, like, what's the Chiddush? In other words, the mission doesn't need to teach us, like, somebody that needs to get to Bet Din and he's unable to walk, so you push him in a wheelchair. Right, but Pshita, you don't need a Mishnah to tell you that, right? But here the Chiddush is that even on Shabbos you can put him on a donkey, you can carry him, you can carry, if you have to take walking sticks with you, you can take food for the way. Sha'al mahalech laila v'yom mechalin et haShabbat. Right. In other words, if he has to travel for that night and the following day, you can be Mechal al Shabbat. Why?
Because you can be
Mechal al Shabbat if there is a need to be Mekadesh the Chodesh. Right? If there's one, and as if there's like three people in town, right? And one can walk on his own, and another can walk only with a stick, and the third one can walk only if you carry him, or if he goes on a donkey, right? So it might be better to send the person.
Better to what?
Somebody that doesn't have to be Mechal al Shabbos, right? But
doesn't mean that he necessarily saw the Moloch.
What?
Well, they all saw it.
No, yeah, three, yeah, obviously. V'yotzin le'edut haChodesh shne'emar ele mo'adei Hashem asher tikru otam b'mo'adam. How do you know you're allowed to be Mechal al Shabbos? Because it's a pasuk. The pasuk says there's a chiyuv to do it on time. Right, to be the most. So in other words, so you see this overrides Shabbat, just like the Torah says you have to do the Mila on the eighth day. So even though Mila involves doing something which otherwise would be Chil Shabbos, the Pasuk tells you it overrides Shabbos.
Well, wouldn't you assume that if it's Shabbat you can assume somebody else has seen it as well, a little twice as that Machal Shabbat? I'm asking.
No,
wouldn't that be a factor?
That's exactly the point.
Okay.
Right? That's exactly the point.
Did we ever discuss, I assume that Bet Din normally are not seen on Shabbat.
No, but they normally no, but the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin sat waiting, and as if they knew it was one of the days, right? As if one of the two potential days comes out on Shabbos, they stayed open for business to accept Eidus that would have come even on Shabbos. So the Mishnah, and as the Mishnah says that the witnesses can be Mechal Shabbos to travel to Yerushalayim or wherever the Sanhedrin was sitting, but they can only be Mechal Shabbos if they'll get there on time. In other words, if you saw that, if you were up in the Golan and you saw the Galil and you saw the Chodesh, how long did it take to get to Yerushalayim? Well, even today it takes almost a whole day, right? And that's by car.
Depends on
traffic. With modern highways, right? Rosh Chodesh Elul, right? The end of Summersman, right? When everybody's up on vacation in the Galil, you know how long it takes to get to the Galil and back by car? It could take a whole day. But when you're going by foot, you're going by donkey, how many days' journey was it? It was quite a few. Would anybody from the Galil ever go to be Mekadesh HaChodesh? By the time you got there, it's already going to be a week later. Right?
Well, the question really would be, nowadays you have to actually go in person.
That's a different question. That's not... right? What will happen? Mashiach vil tkimin, right? And we'll go back to Kiddush al-Pi Re'iya. What's that going to be like? Like, how's it going to be?
Sadia going, it won't.
According to Sadia, it won't go, right? But in other words, Lu Yitzui, we'll go back to Kiddush al-Pi Re'iya. So how will it be done? And how will the whole purpose of what's the whole purpose of Yom Tov Sheni Shagolius?
It's an honest for not making aliyah.
Well, it's because you couldn't get the word to people quick enough, right? You know how long it took news to travel from Yerushalayim to Bavel, to say nothing of Yerushalayim to Tinek. It took a long time. Now you know what they have, like hello, right? You can. It's like the Jetsons. Right? It's better than the Jetsons. George Jetson didn't even have a smartphone. He had that thing on the wall. Right?
No, but Dick Tracy had a smartwatch.
Dick Tracy had a smartwatch, right? So, that's a question for Mashiach Zeiten. So,
and there are questions about Yom Tov Shishavoyot anyway. I mean, once you knew when Pesach was, you know when Shavuot is supposed to
yes.
be. So even if you found out afterwards, you know which day it is. There's no safek.
Low plug. Nope. So you could only be Mechal Shabbos if you were going to get there by the next day, because longer than that, it's no longer relevant. Because the month would have already become Mu'ubar, right? It would have been a full month in all cases. So look at the Rambam here. Look at the Rambam. Halacha Tedvav, the second halacha. This is a Perek Gimel Halacha Tedvav in Hilchos Kiddush HaKodesh. Beit Din Sheyashvu Kol Yom Shloshim. Now remember, Yom Shloshim is the question. Yesterday was the 29th. Today is either the 30th, or maybe it's the. If we'll succeed in having witnesses come, it'll become the first. Velo Ba'u Edim V'Hishkimu B'Neshef V'Ibru Et HaChodesh K'moshe B'Yarno B'Perek Zeh. Right? So they would sit. The night come. The net. What's a net? Neshef is the night. Right. What is it in modern Hebrew? What's nef?
An owl.
That may be David. David.
In modern Hebrew, neshef is a ball.
Is a ball. It's like a prom, like a ball, not a ball at kadur, a ball like Cinderella goes.
Which is always at night.
Which is always at night. So that's how neshef becomes neshef. This is like an interesting question of like how it takes that name, like who, like so it's like one of those things. There's like a machlokus between Ben Yehuda and someone else about what's the proper term for one of these like festive evening balls. It's neshef because it's an evening event. So anyway, so if the witnesses come and the night arrives, so then they do ibur chodesh, right? Meaning the last month was mu'ubar. That day that they were sitting turns out to have been the 30th, and tomorrow becomes the first. V'achar arba o chamisha yamim ba'u edim rechokim v'he'idu sheru et ha'chodesh b'zmano shehu leil shloshim. And then 4 or 5 days later, these guys schlepping from the Galil or from wherever come in, and they say, yeah, on Sunday night we saw the Chodesh. So that the day that they were sitting and waiting was not in fact the 30th, but it was the 1st. And today is not the 5th of the month, it's the 6th of the month. Va'afilu bo besof ha'chodesh. Right, even if they came at the end of the month, ma'aymin alehen iyum gadol u'matrifim otam b'sheilot u'matrichim alehen b'vdikot u'medaktekim b'edutan u'mishtadlin betin shelo yikadshu chodesh ze ho'il v'yatsa shmo mu'ubar. They would do whatever they could do to slug up these guys' testimony. And it could be that next month these guys are not going to make the month-long trip. But, what's the problem?
The next month will be off.
No, in other words,
the 30th won't be the 30th, it'll be the 29th.
Not just that, but like all month long we've been wrong.
Right?
All month long we've been wrong. And what if it was Nisan?
Right.
What if it was Tishrei? Right. What if? What if? Right. So everything gets messed. So in other words, they do whatever they can to try to poke a hole in the edut here, right? Because otherwise, it means we have to go back and recalculate everything.
Why do they accept edut?
Yeah, I never understood this.
Edim show up. Edim show up, and they say we have. You understand this so much better than everyone else. Why are you not teaching this?
No, but I'm like,
you go to that Yomi Yun.
It's a halacha issue. Okay. It's like if Bet Din doesn't want to accept Eidim, they don't have to accept Eidim. It's like, you know, the High Court of Israel decided something and you're not going to do it. And you say, I have Eidut. It's like Nigmar.
Well, no, because we do reopen cases all the time. Somebody, there's a murder trial and somebody's convicted and they're sitting in prison for life, yeah. Right? And then years later, right, there's new testimony comes to light.
I know cases where years later they come in and the court says, no, we're not going to listen to you. But that's beside the point. I'm just saying, by us,
isn't that basically what's happening here?
No, but I'm saying the court has to decide to accept it, and we already know from I forget where in the Gemara that Bet Din was given the right to go ve'agamim ta'uv gamim whatever.
Well, yeah.
So if Bet Din decides we don't want to listen because you miss a time and it's tircha gadola, why do they have to beat up?
Listen to the next halacha.
Poses a lot of halachic.
No, I know.
Listen to the next halacha. Ve'im bechozot im amdu ha'edim be'edutan. But if nevertheless they insist and they give proper evidence which stands the test of scrutiny, and the two witnesses can corroborate each other, and they're trustworthy and they're known and the testimony is examined and found to be truthful. And Achinami, you go back retroactively, and you say the Chodesh was not, Rosh Chodesh wasn't on Wednesday, it was on Tuesday. The day that we called the 30th was really the 1st, and, you know, just redo.
And we blew with the Korbanot, we blew with Rosh Hashanah.
Retroactively, retroactively is something else. Okay. But, right, in other words, what do we call that?
A mistake?
We call that a shogeg. You know about
onus.
The guy?
Onus.
Onus. It's right. It's right. It's an onus. It's worse. It's. I mean, it's better than a show gig. It's. But in other words, this is. You know, you never had your tefillin checked. I started becoming religious and I put on tefillin and Baruch Hashem. From the time I started wearing tefillin, about the age of 15, I've never missed a day of tefillin. Never missed a day of tefillin. I can't understand that people miss a day of tefillin. Right, I have a friend went on vacation to Italy, and he said they were getting in the cab at the airport, and they turned around, and their suitcase was gone, got stolen, ruined their trip. So, what was my first question?
Why did you put the tefillin in your suitcase?
Was it filling in your suitcase? So. So no, it wasn't that. You know, there are people that sometimes I will put my tefillin in my suitcase, but I've never had a problem with it. But
Never.
But no, my question was, what did you do for tefillin that day? So he said that first day he didn't have tefillin. So the next day he went to Chabad. But Baruch Hashem, Bli Ayin Hara, I've never missed tefillin. But at a certain point, I had this pair of tefillin. You can't even buy dakot anymore. I mean, maybe you can someplace, but when was the last time you saw somebody with tefillin dakot?
Very rare.
Very rare. But we have a bar mitzvah coming up, so I've started. Shalom, my eldest son, Rachman al Assam, my father-in-law passed away about a year before the bar mitzvah. So my mother-in-law said, my father-in-law had recently gotten new tefillin. So she said, we'll give him Saba's tefillin. Right, what could be nicer than that, you know? It was also nice because we got off the hook, we didn't have to buy tefillin. But now we have another bar mitzvah coming up. So I had to start pricing tefillin. Oh boy, it's not.
I mean, hi, it's good. Bitch.
Oh yeah, well, Rafi Kadosh. But so anyway, I had these dakot. I had a certain bar here in yeshiva. And I took him a Nosson Siegel Zichron Levracha. I said, I should probably have these tefillin checked. They checked the posel lechatchila, and it wasn't like you hear stories like they open it up and there's nothing inside, or they open it up and there's comic strips inside, and you open it up and there's parshios that are just xeroxed, and whatever it is. But they were posel lechatchila. I mean, they were never kosher. It's not like they became. Sometimes they become posel. So, I was so despondent, right? Because you think all those years I'm a brachos levatala, and I didn't I hadn't been mekayim mitzvah tefillin whatever for those couple of years, so it's not how we treat it. We don't treat it like it's not a bracha levatala. I mean, it's not right. It's not. But in other words, you did what you had to do. That's why I have to get your tefillin checked from time to time. So okay, that's what it is. But lamaisa, it's more important for going forward, right?
Or it may not matter for going forward. It's even beyond Shloshim, it seems. Okay.
What? No, but it's going to be.
No, so you'll do Pesach on the right day.
If this happens too many times, right? In other words, if the real Rosh Chodesh is on, let's say, on Tuesday, right? And no witnesses come, so on Wednesday it's going to be the first. And if it happens the next day,
if what happens?
If you get pushed off again for some reason, right? It's cloudy month after right, month after right, month after right, month. Right. At a certain point, there has to be a corrective, right? Because it's going to be the 24th of the month, and there's going to be the Rosh Chodesh.
That's why Rav Sadia Gaon and Rav Hananel says that obviously they corrected right? Such things.
So the Rambam says, Halacha Tetzai, the Imam Du'a Edim, right? So they go back and they fix it. Halacha Yud Zayin, the Im Hutzuchu Betin Lahaniach Chodesh Ze Meubar Keshehaya Kodem Shiavo Eilu Ha'edim Manichim. But if the Betin had a reason, right? The Betin could override these, even if the Edim insist on coming and give testimony, right? And maybe the way it works is that since the point of Betin is to accept testimony, you can't have, what do they call that in a jury trial? Each side has a certain number of
preemptive,
right? Preemptive disqualifications, right? In other words, each side is allowed to say, I don't like that guy. And maybe he's racially motivated, maybe he's whatever it is. But that's so Betin maybe can't have a preemptive disqualification of somebody who comes forward and says, I have testimony to say before this Betin. Right? Once they give the testimony, so Betin can poke a hole in it. And if they can't poke a hole, taka, this is rock solid, soundproof evidence. Betin still has a kind of what do you call like in American jurisprudence, right? A judge has authority to it's called to set aside the verdict if he thinks the jury really screwed it up. V'zehu sha'amru ma'avrin et ha'chodesh l'tzorech. If there's a need. V'yesh min ha'chachamim ha'gdolim mi shecholek b'davar zeh v'omer le'olam ein ma'avrin et ha'chodesh l'tzorech. Right? I don't know. I mean, do you know whose opinion he's referencing here? Right? But the Rambam admits this is not a unanimous position.
Wait, so I'm sorry. So he's saying that the Reisha says that even if they come and even if they testify, we can set it aside, and there are Chachamim who are cholek on this.
And then in parentheses, Ki'ilu, he says, you know, not everyone agrees with this position. But it's a rather rare kind of phenomena in a Rambam to say such a thing. But if
he says we don't have to accept the testimony, then what was the point of beating them up?
No, in other words, because look, ideally,
I'm not sure what's worse.
What's the ideal here? The best would be that no Edim show up after the fact. Once you say today is Rosh Chodesh, you don't want anyone else coming forward and saying you got it wrong. I mean, it's not like right? What?
Not saying why would people come then if you're not supposed to?
It's not that you're not supposed to. It's not that you're not supposed to, right?
But it's a low ratsui.
It's not low ratsui. It's low ratsui.
You have a requirement. I think.
Right? If you see something, say something, right?
But that's not clear. It's Epstein's responsibility to deal with the calendar, not. Well, okay, whatever.
But there's no doubt that there was great. It was considered a great kavod. Imagine you're the one that gets to be makadesh the chodesh. You get it's like I don't know. It's like who knows? Like you go back to your little village. It's like the guy that gets to light the Yom Ha'atzmut.
Lokokach barur, because they had to, like, you know, feed them food so that they would keep coming.
So. Well, we don't have to incentivize them so that they would
come. They had to be incentivized, but it was probably a great, think of mitzvot.
Whatever the reason, they
can't. Think of mitzvot. Like, you always see this on the internet. People who do Shiluach HaKen.
Not a Glarufa, what's the other one with the donkey?
Petach Hamor. Right? Peter Chamor. Right? These very rare mitzvot. The people have like a cheshik, you want to do it. You want to be Mekayim the mitzvah. You want to, right? I mean, not when we say we want to do all the mitzvahs, it's not true. Right? You want to do, there's a mitzvah to do skila for somebody who's chayav skila. You want to do that? No, I don't want to do that.
Then so are Amara.
I'm not supposed to say that out loud.
I once heard Karlbach, it's Karlbach's Yortzeit coming up. This week, next week, 25 years. So I went to Karlbach say, you know, Karlbach was divorced, but he continued to on the moshav, like he continued to live with his ex-wife. I don't know the story, but I remember him once saying, "Oh my holy ex-wife, like a mamish, I never thought I'd get to be Mekayim. There's a mitzvah. I thought I'd never be able to be Mekayim of Nesinus Haget. And then my holy ex-wife, my holy Grusha, she helped me do this mitzvah. So the mitzvahs you don't want to do. It's like this. The best thing is the witnesses come on time, you mekadesh the chodesh, and then gemarnu. But if the witnesses don't come on time, and it's an ibur, you have 30 days, and then witnesses come late, so then the best thing is that even though they came, there's something flawed in their testimony, which probably happened a lot, right? Because it's not just, even if they're telling the truth, it doesn't mean that the testimony isn't going to be flawed. And even if they're telling the truth, it doesn't mean that there isn't going to be some discrepancy in their testimony, which would allow the Betin to say, can't rely on it. There were plenty of times when witnesses came on time, and Betin knew, because they were astronomers, they knew that Taka, it really is Rosh Chodesh, but the witnesses, they were simple folk, or their memory was flawed, or there was some other thing, right?
They were brothers, or
who knows what. So some other reason that they were disqualified, and even though we objectively know they were telling truth, they were not valid witnesses. But if Taka, they can't poke a hole in it, so then either they have to recalculate the and some months. What would be the big deal if it's Rosh Chodesh Mar Cheshvan? right? And the witnesses come only 3 days late. What's the big deal?
Right? Even if they come 13 days late, what's the big deal?
Right.
If you're a landlord or a tenant, you might care. But.
Yes, but anyway. But then, Taka, the Beis Din has the authority to set aside the verdict, to say, b'chol zot, we're not going to do it. Why? Because it would wreak havoc with the dates and with the calendar and with everything else, right? So there's a question. When the Mishnah says that the witnesses can be mechal Shabbos, but only if they're going to get there on time, since you can have retroactive Kiddush HaChodesh, no.
Why shouldn't
they be able to be mechal Shabbos even if they're not going to get there on time? Maybe they'll arrive on the 32nd day, which is still, you know, if they're witnesses and they're traveling, and for all they know, they're the only witnesses in the world.
It might be similar to the difference of Mila on the 8th day or Mila on the 9th day.
Bizmano,
there's the proper way to do it, and there's sort of a b'dieved. They didn't make it in time, but we accept it anyway if we haven't succeeded.
That's interesting. I didn't see that said anywhere.
You're not going to make it in time anyway, waiting for Shabbat.
No, that's interesting.
I never wrote it down.
Uh-huh.
No, in that case, if they know they're not going to make it in time, so they don't have to leave on Shabbat. They can go on Sunday.
So the argument not to
Shabbat, because everyone agrees that in all cases when there's this retroactive, it's better to minimize the distance.
But not actually have to be mechalel Shabbat,
right?
Oh. Minimize it.
I mean, do we know is this in the Gemara somewhere, or is this only the Rambam Shita that says that you accept testimony after the time?
I do not know the answer to that question. So, but there's another problem. The Mishnah.
You had a different answer, though.
What?
It sounded like you were vomiting.
Okay, well, no, but there's still more questions. The Mishnah that we learned earlier, Ruhu Betin V'chol Yisrael, the Mishnah on Kafei Ambez, says, if nevertheless, Ruhu Betin V'chol Yisrael, objectively they know that the 30th day is really the first day, is really Rosh Chodesh. But if for some technical reason they couldn't be Mekadesh Chodesh before nightfall, so then that day, which objectively they know is the first, becomes the 30th.
Why not do it the next day retroactively?
So why not do it the next day? Ru Betin V'chol Yisrael. Every member of the Sanhedrin saw it. Right? But something went wrong, something went screwy. There was a fire. They were about to sit down and do it. There was a fire drill. And they had to run out of the Lishchat HaGazit. And by the time the fire drill was over, they'd missed the opportunity. So tomorrow, take two of these Dayonim and be Mekadesh Nachodesh retroactively. Right?
That's a question on the Rambam, because we don't know anybody who says this.
Look at the Rambam in Halacha Aleph. Eidim sheru et achodesh im haya b'neihem uvein makom sheyesh bo betin mahalach laila v'yom o pachot holichinu me'idim. If the distance between the witnesses and the betin is less than a night and a day, then they go. Ve'im haya b'neihem yeter al kein lo yelchu she'en edutan achar yom shloshim mo'elet shekvar nitaber chodesh. If you know you can't get there by that day, the 30th, or what you believe to be the first, there's no point in going. So you'd never leave from the Gal. You'd never leave. Would we go from here?
It's the steer in the Rambam.
Was it the same Rambam who wrote Halacha Aleph and Tet Zayin?
Yes. No, but in other words, would we go from here? We saw the Chodesh here.
Why not?
Did you see the moon tonight? The moon tonight was
big.
Was big.
It should be full.
It was.
The day after full.
But I didn't see it, but I know it was full.
Why wouldn't you go from here?
How long would it take us to walk from here to
only like half a day?
I came in the morning.
Half a day?
It's like to the TLC. Okay. 10 kilometers as the crow flies.
It's not that far.
From Hebron would they go?
Take them a day. Definitely day and night.
You see the new moon at around 10 p.m. And Shkia tomorrow is at 4:45. Is it worth going from Chevron?
It all depends on your time. 10 p.m., they're going to serve you?
You can't make it in 16 hours to...
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to travel at night when there's no moon out.
You're going to, right, from Chevron? On foot? On Derech Avot? You think you can get there by Shkia the next day?
Yeah, take a donkey, take a lantern,
I don't know.
You could go to Beersheba, okay. I would
you
say
ride
no.
A horse,
but...
gallop.
Okay, could be Yecholiot, I don't know these things. But the point is, the Rambam says if you know you can't get there, if you're in Beersheba, or if you're in Tveria, right? Or
no,
if you're in Akko.
More specifically, it doesn't matter if you know or you don't know. It says, Lomo Iolach Reish Loshim.
It says no point, right? There's no point. So these are all questions on the subsequent Rambam, who says... It's not the way we want to do it, but theoretically you can do it retroactively.
Right.
So the Lechem Mishnah here, this long Lechem Mishnah.
Who's the Lechem Mishnah?
The Lechem Mishnah was...
Whatever,
I just wouldn't you. Oh, this is the Lechem Mishnah about the bread. Oh, no. The Lechem Mishnah was Rav Avram Debiton, who lived in the 16th century.
Okay.
So the Lechem Mishnah says the following. He says, even the Rambam agrees that Minatora, Kiddush HaChodesh can't be done retroactively. It can only be done on that day, on the day 29 plus 1, right? Which is either the 30th or the 1st. And even if the Beit Din made a mistake, right? There's no need to retroactively fix it because of this principle of Masha Asui Asui. Right? Since Beit Din has the authority to be Mekadesh the Chodesh, right? Even if they got it wrong, this is, you know, the famous Gemara in Brachos. Right? About which day is the real Yom Kippur? Even if objectively we know that even Yom Kippur they got the day wrong, Yom Kippur is when Chazal say Yom Kippur is. And as Beit Din has absolute authority in making this call, even if it's astronomically the wrong call.
Which is what we do like today, every day.
So what do you mean?
Our rabbinic calendar today is not astronomically correct.
It's not astronomically correct.
I mean, it's not even astronomically correct according to the Rambam.
Why? What does that mean?
Wait, I forget. Because according to the Rambam, we go by the Re'iyah, and our calculated calendar is by the Molad, which is invisible. Kilo, we start Rosh Hashanah on the Molad, when you can't possibly see the moon.
Right.
So it's entirely different than the halachot during the Beit Hamikdash.
Because the
Ruach HaChaim said, this is the way we do it.
So if this is the case, so what does the Rambam mean by this idea of the retroactive Kiddush HaChodesh? So the Rambam holds that in the case where the witnesses come later and say that they saw the moon on the day which the Beit Din held was the 30th, so Chazal made it that the Beit Din should accept the testimony in order to prevent the whole thing looking like a joke. In other words, if the whole world knows that Beit Din got it wrong, even though Ikar HaDin, they're allowed to get it wrong, right? And there's no such thing as Beit Din getting it wrong. Whatever Beit Din says, that's the fact. It's koveya the metzias of time, of the calendar, even for the purposes of Kedusha Sazman, right? But it will undermine authority in the whole system, right? So since there's no real reason to go back and fix and change the date, other than to try to shore up the integrity of the system, so the witnesses who come later can't be Mechalel Shabbos. In other words, the Chilul Shabbos that we allow is for the actual establishment of Rosh Chodesh.
Bizman.
What?
In time.
Bizman, right. But this retro to doing it late, which sometimes we might tolerate if necessary, that's not going to justify Chilul Shabbos. Also, if the witnesses see the Rosh Chodesh and know that they won't be able to reach the Bet Din in time, there's no reason for them to travel to Bet Din, as the Rambam says in the first halacha. Even if they somehow knew or suspected that they were the only ones in the world to have seen it, right? As they let's say they know somehow that no one else saw the moon, and they are in possession of the knowledge which will get the calendar objectively, astronomically correct. Right? But what? They can't get there. They can't get there in time to get it done. So there's no reason for them to go. There's no reason for them to go because Bet Din's error, its objective error, is still halachically correct. Because Chazal have the power to move things around.
He seems to be, you know, saying davar v'hipucho. Saying Bet Din has the authority. I understand they have the authority. And they're saying, but we don't want to undermine their authority if everyone knows that they're wrong. So therefore, we let people come in and contradict Bet Din and make them look foolish by having to do it back. It's like it doesn't make sense. If they have the authority, then we just shouldn't accept people after the 30th, and then we know they have authority.
Right, which is why, as why the Rambam says that technically speaking, Bet Din could retroactively jimmy with the date, but everything is done to avoid that. But in other words, it has to do with this question of keeping. You know, like there's a lot of discussion now, like there are these big cases now coming before the Supreme Court. Like that's in America. Today's the DACA case about immigration, and you know, soon enough there are going to be all these cases that are going to be related to the impeachment and everything else like that. And there's all this discussion about how the court in general, and Roberts in particular as the Chief Justice, are very concerned about the integrity of the court. And whatever the Supreme Court is, the Beit Din Elyon. Whatever the Supreme Court says, that's what it is. If the Supreme Court says it's constitutional, that's what goes. But it's not enough that they have that absolute authority, right? There's a concern that their decisions should not undermine trust in the system, because that's the whole way democracy works.
We should speak to Harold Barak.
No, but that's the whole way that democracy works, because people are prepared to be governed by the laws. Right? When we say that the power flows from the people have to be willing to. In halacha, we also have this idea of gzeira she'en rov hatzibur yochol la'amod bo. Now, Kiddush HaChodesh is not a gzeira, but the idea that people have to have trust in the system, otherwise it erodes the whole thing, is common to both systems of jurisprudence. So that's this Mishnah. The next Mishnah has to do with the procedures of Edut. As the second Perek deals largely with questions of the procedural testimony and reliability of witnesses, which is like a curious thing. In other words, it shows the associative nature of knowledge in Chazal, in the Gemara. Where would you think, if you have to organize all of Shas, where would you put the Perek that deals with... You would think it would be in Sanhedrin. Right, and but agav to this discussion of edim, most people didn't ever have to give testimony. How many of you have ever been involved in a court case? How many of you have ever testified in court? Yes? Okay. Most people don't. The overwhelming majority of people never go and, like, you watch TV, it seems like everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
But
by the way, take a look at the last line before the Mishnah that we started with.
It's 9:30. Ish chiyuv?
What about women?
By machshirin aid for edut isha, to let her marry. That was exactly what you were talking about at the beginning of the shiur.